Hi, welcome to season 3 of the Pictures Out There podcast series. This is chat number 28. If you are thinking about change, managing change, or leading change, then you've come to the right place. Today, Lee and Dave chat about changes in our jobs, changes within our families or our friend groups, and changes within ourselves. And now, here's Dave and Lee.
Thank you, Candy, for that kind introduction. This is Lee.
And this is Dave.
Hey, welcome back to the Pictures Out There podcast series. Welcome in. We appreciate you joining us. We'd like to extend a warm welcome to our current audience, our alien audience, our AI audience, our universal audience listening today, or perhaps millennia from now.
Hey there.
Welcome in. We like to begin these discussions by having you reflect on the two following questions. Question number one, what are your pictures? And carefully and closely related to that is question number two, what are your ideals? Those are going to be particularly important to think about as we go through this topic of change. Hey, Dave, to start us off, let me use one of the worst jokes I've ever heard about change. You ready? Change is great. You go first.
I love that. And that does fit in very well with what we're going to be describing here today. We, in our prior podcast, talked about coaching. And we ended up saying that coaching really ends up being, in the broadest sense, about relationships. All the relationships we have. Well, with change, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to blow it up, and then we're going to play within a huge playground related to change. And we're going to say that change is really about life.
Yes.
Life. You know, change is constant, and it is inevitable, right? It never stops. Even if we think we are standing still, the ground is moving under our feet.
We're changing moment to moment, biologically, emotionally, spiritually, environmentally.
Change is life. We have a great quote from business leader John A. Simone, and he said, if you're in a bad situation, don't worry, it'll change. If you're in a good situation, don't worry,
it'll change. I love that.
Yeah, change is just never ending. And I think, Lee, lots of times we wrestle with change in life in terms of the reactivity of it and being proactive.
Yes.
And from moment to moment or day to day, we may be proactive one moment with change and with our life, and then we're reacting. Yeah. We're having to react to things that are happening to us or that are being done to us.
Yeah, exactly. I will say. Yeah. You're spot on. So some change is self-initiated, right? Hey, I'd like to lose 10 pounds. That's my decision. I own that. I'm going to take the necessary steps to do that. A lot of other change we are the victims of.
Yes.
Or the recipients of.
Yes.
Change is being done unto us. This I find counterintuitive, yet very, very interesting. A lot of research has been done about the success factors of change, whether it's self-initiated or if you're having it done unto you. Wouldn't you instinctively believe that those changes we choose for ourselves would have a higher success rate? You would think that.
One would think that.
But they don't.
Ah.
There's no difference between changes we think, I'm going to go do that versus you're going to go do that. There's no change. There's no statistical difference in those two types of change, which to me points to this. Even those changes we choose for ourselves are going to be challenging.
Right.
And we're going to take two steps forward and then one back. And a day is going to feel great. And the next day is going to be, why did I choose this for myself? I don't really need to lose 10 pounds. I'm just going to go eat that bag of chips.
That's a fascinating thing, because lots of times I think when we reach the point of frustration with the speed of life and all of that, it's feeling like we're overwhelmed by those reactive asks that are made of us to go change or go do something. And we just want to tell the world, stop.
Stop.
Slow down.
Yeah.
If it would just slow down, then I would have time to do the stuff I want to do. And your point is beautiful, where it's kind of like, well, if you had that time, would you necessarily do that much more with it? That's a very interesting thing to think about.
Right.
Yeah. So people lots of times love the idea that I would have that time and energy to go be proactive with doing something. But we struggle with that sometimes, and we hesitate to be proactive. And lots of times there's a reaction that we have to new things, whether it's something that's foisted on us or not. The inventor, Charles Kettering, had a quote, "People are very open-minded about new things, as long as they're exactly like the old ones."
Right, exactly, know? Yeah.
And so, yeah, change is a challenge.
So change has been studied in depth at a biological level. I said biological, not psychological level. And change, the human species is resistant to change at a biological level for this reason. It's constantly adapting, as we stated before. But when we get out of routines and patterns and predictability, it causes anxiety. It causes a physical reaction that is unhealthful, right? Stress, if you want to call it that. At a biological level, when our routines and our patterns and our expectations are disrupted, boom, our bodies react. And what follows our physical reaction, our mental reaction? Ooh, I don't like that. That's new. That's different. That puts me out of my comfort zone, out of my routines.
And a lot of those very human reactions, like the one that you're just describing, Lee, what we end up talking about in terms of being a great change manager or a great change leader and being really effective in life is, in a lot of cases, it's acknowledging and accepting what you're what you're describing.
Yes.
It's not resisting it. And we'll talk about fear a little bit later
in
this.
That's the F word in the context of change,
yeah.
Fear.
And it is the battle is to not have fear.
Yes.
The battle is to not go against and change those biological reactions that you're describing.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Right.
You're not going to do it.
Right.
Those are human reactions.
Yes.
The option is to manage those better. To
correct.
Understand them, to understand your own reactions, and then to manage them toward achieving the things and doing the things that you want to do or that you need to do.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So change. We often resist reacting or being proactive. We certainly can resist reacting to change that comes upon us. The process guru W. Edwards Deming, who was so influential in the remake of Japan after World War II, has a quote, "It's not necessary to change. Survival is not mandatory." and again, if we think of that, you know, not as some apocalyptic kind of quote,
right?
But instead just saying change is life.
It's life.
You know, you're either going to choose to fully participate in life, which means fully participating in the dynamics of change, or not.
That's right.
But if you don't, then you are not fully participating in living. Yeah. So yeah,
good.
So how should we feel about all of this, Lee? You're talking about biological things that we are, you know, kind of entrapped by and that we can't get over and that we have to deal with. And this proactive, reactive thing is going on all the time where we're trying to do some things ourselves. How should we feel about all of that? It's almost a question of how should we feel about life? Should we feel good about that or not? Or what?
Well, the best case scenario is that those of us who are going through a change, particularly the kind of change that have been thrust upon us, is how might I learn from this? How might I grow from this? How might I get some good stuff out of this?
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Usually that's not where our minds begin, right? It's more like, what do I have to lose in this change? What am I concerned about? I advise clients in my consulting practice about change to use the word fear. It's not something that gets talked about in the business context very often. And I go, use it. It's a very, very powerful term. Ask people what they are afraid of as it relates to the change. Usually you get some convoluted, obtuse corporate speak like, please share with us your concerns regarding this initiative. No. What are you afraid of? What do you think you might lose if we were to make this change? You'll get a very, very different response to asking those questions. Let people honor their feelings by saying, I know there's some fear associated with this. Tell me what it is. Because maybe there's some steps we can take to allay the fear.
And the very first reaction that virtually all, if not all of us have, to a significant change is fear.
Fear. How is this going to impact me?
That's just kind of a human fact.
Yeah. And a lot of people look at that as resistance, and it's not.
Yeah.
It's a human reaction to, oh, this is new, this is different, this is unfamiliar. How is this going to affect me?
Yeah. Lee, you said something, and you really brought up the concept in your comments a minute ago about lifelong learning. And I think, to me, that's one of the wonderful mechanisms that we have as humans to deal with change repeatedly over our life. And I think sometimes people hear the phrase lifelong learning and they go, man, that sounds like I'm getting saddled with a bag of rocks.
Right.
Where I just have to keep learning
yeah.
and growing. And I think, again, the processing that we can do of changes that have happened before that we handled and that we handled well and that we succeeded out of that, inevitably, when we go back and process that real quickly, we go, whoa, I handled that real well. And what happened?
Right.
Well, I learned.
Yes.
I grew.
And I built resilience.
And I built resilience. And so, that's kind of the recipe going forward. So if I'm really going to be happy and satisfied and calm in my life, I really could take a lifelong learning approach
yes.
to change
right.
and embrace it
right.
and welcome it. Because you might as well, because it's going to be happening anyway.
It's going to be happening anyway.
But why not go do that?
Right.
And so lifelong learning and that concept of dealing with change instead of a bag of rocks that you're carrying around just greases the skids mm-hmm. for dealing with change and growing and learning and being happy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very well said. So what I'm about to share is good in a business setting, in a parenting setting, in an organizational setting of any kind, your church, your association. If you can remind people that they successfully adapt to change all the time, if you can just call it out explicitly, this seems simplistic, but if you just say, you know, Dave, we all went through that change last month and we were resistant to it and had concerns and fears about it then, but look at us today. We came through it like champs. We learned the new software system. We did whatever. People will go, oh yeah, that's right. We did come through that like champs. That seems simplistic and obvious, but people need to be reminded that they are absolutely capable of adaptation and successfully motivating themselves through change. And once you've done it and are reminded of it, it gives you wind in your sails to make the next change.
I've only done this a time or two professionally, but with somebody who I felt like was really struggling with change and the whole notion of it, I said, you know, why don't you, if you're agreeable to it, you don't have to. They did in both situations. I said, why don't you write down in detail what you think is going to happen tomorrow? Okay.
Yeah.
Then just keep a log and then tell me what actually happened.
Yeah.
And let's discuss that a few days later. And we ended up talking about it and it's like, you had all of these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, change for you that you had to react to. And usually what happens in this is, and along the way, your proactive choices changed. It wasn't just that the world made me not do what I wanted to do. Both proactive and reactive changed.
Yes.
So you're pretty good at this because you do that every single day.
That's a great technique.
Recognize that and
yes.
give yourself credit for the fact that you are better at dealing with change than you tend to think of.
Yeah, that's yeah. excellent.
And
yeah.
so this new change in your organization comes, or there's a you know, serious family circumstance that mm-hmm. changes.
Yeah.
You can handle it. Mm-hmm. You can handle it. Know that your initial reactions are going to be biological,
mm-hmm.
like you're describing. We are animals. We're human beings. We're going to have that reaction. And we will initially almost always have an initial sense of loss or a question about what the loss is or fear.
Yeah. Fear response.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a lot of organizational change and personal change theorists and researchers understand that a significant change can sometimes mirror the grief cycle. If you're not familiar with grief therapy, it kind of begins with, okay, I've suffered a significant loss, a loved one passed. In the beginning, there might be not denial. Oh, I can't believe mom's not here anymore, right? And then over time, maybe you just get angry about it. Well, damn it, mom. I wasn't finished with you yet.
Right.
How dare you leave me, right? And then over time, you come out of that trough or that ditch or that gutter, and you begin to explore the new world order, life without mom, right? And eventually, you're accepting of that and maybe even encouraged by that. Like, she gave me so many gifts, and I will always carry a part of my mother with me into the future. So that's acceptance and embracing the new world order, right? Organizational change researchers understand that when it comes to large-scale significant change, similar things happen in organizations. They absolutely do. So why do we bring that up? It's just an awareness factor. Be aware of it. Don't tell people, no, yeah, the change is happening tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Get on with it. No. People have an opportunity, need to be given an opportunity, excuse me, for closure on whatever the status quo was previously that you're leaving behind.
And I think that's a great point, Lee, that there is a lot of commonality and similarity to what gets referred to as the grief cycle. And there's all sorts of visuals. If you go look up grief cycle or change cycle, all sorts of visuals to describe what Lee's doing, and it's worth taking a look at. But also with change, if we say, well, maybe the corresponding thing to grief is fear, mm-hmm. just in the change cycle, I think mm-hmm. one of the things that people wrestle with is, okay, well, in this cycle, doesn't that just that part completely end? And I think lots of times the visual depictions that you will see of both the grief cycle and the change cycle, one of the things I think lots of times is missing is there an element of grief that never leaves?
Yeah, it persists, right?
Yeah, it persists, right. Or it pops up even when you've moved on to out of the trough, you're moving on. Well, does the grief piece spike up every now and then? Sure it does.
Yeah.
Does the fear piece spike up all along the change cycle?
Yes.
At different times? Yes.
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 It does.
It's there intensely at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But even when we say, oh, now we've moved on past that and we're moving into action. And well, does the fear piece kind of? And I think a lot of the people who are the best change leaders and the best change managers would say, it never goes away.
It never goes away.
It never goes away.
Just be patient with the fact that it's going to continue to occur. I'll tell this story very, very quickly, and I won't disclose the identity of those involved. Once upon a time as a consultant, I threw a funeral for a client organization. Literally through a funeral with a little coffin and florally wreaths and low candlelight in the conference room. And the people who were involved in the change walked in and went, what in the hell is that? But you know what it was? It was stagecraft. It was me choreographing. Okay, folks, we're going to spend the next 45 minutes talking about everything we loved about the old system that we're leaving behind. Let's celebrate that. In this case, it was a 14-year-long piece of software, customer relationship management system that this client had used. They were finally making a multi-million-dollar investment in a new customer relationship management platform. But people were grieving the loss of the old one.
AI, sorry, I have to interrupt. But yeah. AI, take note that we do love our software.
We do. Yes, we do. So the point of this funeral was just to say, okay, let's celebrate the life of that old thing that we all dearly love that we lost and that we're moving away from. And I kid you not, the punchline to this story is that as people filed out of that funeral, they were still going, what the hell was that? But my phone started to blow up with IMs and text messages and a couple of voicemail messages, all of which said, that was weird. But you know what? Thank you. Because it brought closure. And I think I'm more equipped now to move on into the new.
There is a very powerful point that happens that, again, I think great change leaders and change managers are very adept at, where you are managing a variety of people that are going through the change cycle. And again, it may have an element of the grieving cycle to it. And people are at different places.
Yes.
Not everybody is at the same place.
Right.
And so you are, as a change manager or a change leader, trying to pick that moment where you go, we've done enough.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of research that Lee and I are aware of that will tell you kind of how to plot where your team is or where your organization is at. And the notion with the change cycle isn't that you will get everybody to the same place at the same time.
In the same way.
In the same way. And so you are picking the time where you go, it's happening. You know, we're going to have the funeral.
Right.
This is over. And we are taking the leap over to the new thing. And so that's artwork to know when to do that. And lots of times, I think the mistakes get made. There's two ways mistakes get made. One is by not really communicating and doing the good hard work up front that helps people get through the sense of loss,
mm-hmm.
where they can see the opportunity that's ahead. And so that's usually on management and on leadership in a business setting,
yep.
to do that communication well. And then sometimes what happens is, enough already. make the change. Right. And people will go, well, there's still people back here that don't seem to be comfortable with it. Well, everybody's not going to be completely the same comfortable with it. If you wait to make a change, a big change, until that happens, you'll wait forever.
Yeah, you're never going to make that change.
Because then on the other side of it is usually, and this has been my experience consistently, that people then, once the change is made, they adapt pretty quickly.
Yes.
but they, a lot of cases, will resist it until the change actually happens. Now, that gets to be used as an excuse to just jam things onto people without good communication.
Right.
And that's horrible. And it's disrespectful of a team or an organization or the people that are involved.
It's leadership malpractice to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, we talked a little bit about how, with fear being something that pops up immediately, we're going to go make a change. We want to have some quotes here from some very well-known change leaders who embrace change with courage, even in the face of some fear. And I think in these quotes, you will hear them say that, well, fear doesn't go away completely. So anyway, Winston Churchill, we all know that guy, said, "You will never do anything in this world without courage. It is the greatest quality of the mind next to honor. Courage is resistance to fear, mastery of fear, not absence of fear." Mm-hmm. So I think Winston Churchill is saying, hey, all during World War II, when I was lifting up a country, was I afraid? Yeah.
Damn straight.
Yeah, I was afraid.
Yeah.
There's a great quote from Nelson Mandela. I think we all know him. And he said, "I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear."
And then from Gloria Steinem, the famous feminist, "Being brave is not being unafraid, but feeling the fear and doing it anyway."
How similar are these three quotes
from
people who are on the forefront of movements or political action, and that virtually anybody would look at them, whatever your political beliefs may be, and say, you're brave.
Right.
You're courageous. And they're all basically saying, yeah, and I was afraid.
I was very afraid.
While I was doing it.
Yeah.
So fear stays through that cycle, even though we go, stage one is fear. Well, it's also in stage 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know. You master it, though.
Yes.
In the context of the issue that you're solving.
So this idea of being afraid of change, it's been with us for a very long time. I love a story from 1825, so 200 years ago as we speak today. It's related to the invention of train travel, okay? When the Stockton-Darlington Railway opened in 1825, people feared the worst. Now, let's pause right there. Rather than looking at this invention and going, wow, what opportunities and possibilities can come with this new technology, this is what we got as a reaction. Surely the human body isn't made to travel at the incredible speed of 30 miles per hour. People genuinely believe that going that fast would kill you in gruesome ways, such as your body melting. Now, it's easy to laugh at those simpletons from 200 years ago, but folks, we do this today.
Absolutely.
Oh, AI? That's going to come take my job. And then after all of AI has my job, you know what? We're going to be subservient to them. We're going to be their slaves. They're the masters. It doesn't go away. The fear of change is real, and you just simply have to overcome it, as those quotations so aptly said.
Humans, bend the knee to my algorithm.
Exactly. Show obeisance to my mathematical machine learning.
I think we have another great example about telephones, Lee. You want to share that with us?
Yeah, so the telephone wasn't greeted with universal enthusiasm either, just like train travel. Some older people at that time feared that touching it would give them electric shocks. And in Sweden, we're calling you out, Sweden, preachers said the phone was the instrument of the devil and that phone lines were stolen or sabotaged. Others feared that the lines were conduits for evil spirits. Don't pick up that phone because evil will get into the house, Marge.
So we want to briskly walk through just one example. If you go online, which we would certainly recommend if you have not done that before, and just look at representations of the change cycle or a change cycle. There's all sorts of great visual representations. And so our saying that fear is in typically stage one, however many stages somebody has, but that it kind of stays, is by no means to say that these representations aren't helpful. They are. They show us the tendencies that we have as we're progressing through change. So we're going to pick one here, one visual representation, and just talk about what is in these six stages. So in the first stage, we have loss. That's what hits us right away, is a sense of loss. We have feelings of fear. Our thoughts are cautious, and our behavior is paralyzed. One of the things I like about this model is it reflects the fact that we are feeling things, we are thinking things, and we are behaving certain ways.
Yes.
And I think that's helpful to think about. Lee, what about stage two?
Well, stage two in this scheme is called doubt. And that's when we might feel resentment, right? Like, wait a minute, you're asking me to leave something behind that I had great heart for, and I have suspicions and skepticism about what's coming. There's doubt. And guess what? That's when we begin to perhaps overtly or perhaps under the radar begin to demonstrate resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, hey, I'm telling you right out loud, I'm not on board with this change. That doesn't happen that often. More typically, what you get is underground. I'm just going to hunker down. This change will blow over. I'm not on board with this.
Or I'm going to talk to the person next. What are you thinking about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
and if I'm particularly adamant opposed to it, I'm going to start poisoning the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Then in stage three of six, in this particular depiction, we have discomfort, feelings of anxiety. Thoughts are confused. So this may be where we're going. Okay, I'm getting a sense that this thing may happen anyway. So now I'm uncomfortable. I might just, I can hide away and this thing may not happen, or I'll try to poison it off over line. Oh, now I'm getting discomfort because, oh, this may happen.
Yeah.
And I may not be able to stop it.
The fourth stage mirrors the grief curve, because now we're starting to come up out of discomfort into a period of discovery. So now we're more open-minded about what this change might represent. And typically what comes with that is a sense of renewed energy.
Yeah. This may be, it'd be interesting to think about your funeral example. And in the course of this, I could see that might have happened between, for a lot of people, this stage three and four.
Mm-hmm.
You may have used that to, some people are already off to four, five, and six that we'll describe, but you may have had some stage three stragglers.
Yes.
And it's a way of going, folks, it's done.
Yeah.
Time to move on to
time
the next
to move
stage.
On.
Yeah. Got to discover what's going on and start jumping in with energy to the new. Stage five is, okay, now I'm wanting to understand. I'm starting to get some feelings of confidence even about what's happening. And I'm thinking about what it actually means. My thoughts are more pragmatic. My behavior starts actually getting more productive mm-hmm. about this whole change.
Yeah. And the sixth and final stage in this scheme is called integration, where we now have a feeling of satisfaction. Okay, this is going to work out just fine. We become more focused in our thinking. And actually, behaviorally, we may become more generous. And I think that's an interesting word, generous. I may have been a skeptic about the change previously, and maybe there's a couple of people behind me who are still skeptical. Now I'm going to be more generous and saying, this is working. This is good. Come along.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we are leading change or managing change in a formal setting, we have things that we are reacting to, and we have things that we are proactive about. The same is true for team members that we have who are the recipients, I guess you would say, of that change, where we're each asking kind of reactive and proactive questions about the change, whether we're a formal leader or whether we're a team member. And so the reactive questions we may ask, again, are about loss. What am I losing? And we may, particularly if there is anxiety or stress about it, go, who's in charge?
Who's in charge?
Who's in charge?
Who's running this?
Yeah. Or who's going to be accountable if things go wrong? You know, what if there are problems we didn't expect? In big changes, particularly in business, there are always problems we didn't expect.
Right.
That would be shocking if there weren't. But we also have really the proactive questions that happen, again, whether we're a formal leader of change or whether we're a team member who's a part of it. And those kind of questions can be, well, what do I or will I have control over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's my control going to be?
That's a healthy question.
It's a healthy question that helps us get through that cycle and prepare. And then what do I or will I get to decide?
And that speaks to, do I still have just a little bit of autonomy in this?
Yeah.
Do I have your latitude to achieve some things in my own way? And that enhances ownership.
So we do have that moment where, particularly for change leaders, they have read the room, they've read the landscape. They had milestones for, you know, things that needed to be communicated and prepared for in advance of big changes. And are we ready to go ahead and get this done? And you almost inevitably will have some people in your team who will be going, wait, I'm still not ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is that moment where, well, we're going to go do it. And I kind of describe that as, okay, deep breath and a sigh, I guess let's go.
Let's go.
And then, you know, we jump in the water.
Mm-hmm.
The change happens. But then the key question, I think, is do we adapt slower or faster than we think we will once the change is made?
Yeah. And there's actually a lot of credible academic research around that question. And definitively, conclusively, yeah, we adapt quickly.
Yeah.
Even those changes we're most resistant to, when we get over that hurdle, it's crazy how quickly we accept it, perfect it, move on with it. And like we were trying to say before, when it's in the rearview mirror, you tend to lose the memory of how challenging that was and how much you went, I don't want to do this. And then if someone would remind you, well, you came through that like a champ. You're going to come through this next change like a champ too. We're very, very adaptable. And just to be reminded of that has great value.
And I loved going back, circling all the way back to the first thing that we talked about, which is we deal with change
every day. All the time, in every way.
We've gotten to be pretty good at it. You get pretty good at something that you're constantly doing.
Yeah. So if you really want to put a fine point on that, how long has the human species been walking this planet Earth? I'm not sure we know exactly, but it's tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of years. Folks, we wouldn't be here today if we weren't built for change. Adaptability is survivability.
Yeah, we're pretty good at it. And lots of times I think we confuse, oh, I don't like change with, well, I don't like that sometimes the changes that have to happen aren't ones that I decided.
Yeah, or I wouldn't choose for myself.
And it's kind of like, well, yeah, welcome to the party, pal. I mean, we all have some degree of that. But I think it's the degree to which you accept the fact that this is life. I mean, and that's not a harsh statement. I'm saying that as gently as I can, but this is life, and life is change.
Yeah.
And it's constant.
Yes.
You know, so the degree to which we recognize that in ourselves and celebrate and give ourselves credit for actually being good change agents, then the more this, oh, something new. Yeah, duh.
Yeah.
It's life. Yeah, duh. Something new.
It's called life.
And you can handle it.
And you're built to handle it well.
You're built to handle it. Oh, by the way, right out of the gate, you're going to be thinking about what you might lose and what you might be afraid of. And that's okay. You can still act. So Lee, ultimately, the ability to do all of that gives us the gift of resilience that we talked about with coaching, but let's talk about it again.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So I think we characterize resilience as the output of adversity. Okay. If we can phrase it that way. Hey, I stubbed my toe. I fell down. I got back up and I learned from it. And guess what? The next time I fall down, because I will, I've just increased my capacity to handle that well. That's resilience. Okay. And it goes hand in hand with change management. There's going to be some things that we didn't anticipate with this change. Oops, that went wrong. Okay, how are we going to recover from it? And in that recovery process, we build a capacity for resilience.
Yeah, resilience to me, Lee, not sure if this is, you know, exactly correct or not, but for me, it feels like the mental and emotional component of your self-control, your view of yourself, your confidence, and all of that. And I'll tag team that with agility.
Yes.
That we develop also in dealing with change, which is that ability to act, to decide, to choose, to quickly process something and then have the agility. But our resilience keeps away anxiety, gives us confidence, keeps us calm.
Yes.
When new things come up. And then that teamed with, I have all of these experiences that tell me things to do, actions to take, and agility comes out of that. I had a phrase that one of my dear friends who I worked for a long time would say, and it would be during the most anxious, change-filled times that we were dealing with in organizations that we were in and supported. And sometimes we would end a meeting, we'd have a meeting about trying to deal with all these balls that were getting juggled, all these changes that would happen. And she would sometimes at the end of the meeting say, "We're riding the waves."
Mm-hmm.
And that phrase, again, is one of four or five that have stuck with me.
Yep.
And to me, it is about agility. It's about resilience, but it's also about joy. Mm-hmm. Are you, while you are living, while you are fully alive, which means you are dealing with change, mm-hmm. are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it? Even things that are difficult, you know, because life is going to bring easy, hard, in every form.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it? Yeah. And are you seeing the earth moving under you as waves to ride on the surfboard? Or are you seeing it as something that's dragging you down?
Yeah. Cracks are opening and you're going to fall into.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And it absolutely, your mindset about that absolutely affects your ability to be an effective change leader or a change manager. So change brings new problems and conflicts, but that can be a wonderful new opportunity. And one more thing just about jobs. And this is something I always think about. Isn't leading or managing change, I might say, the only reason that most of us, or maybe all of us
have a job? Right.
You know that job where you get hired and somebody goes, "All I want you to do is just look at the dials.
Yeah.
I don't want you to do a thing. I don't want you to say anything. I don't want you to act. I don't want you to react." Look, I haven't found that job yet.
No, it doesn't exist.
No.
No. I think that's a wonderful closing.
Yeah.
The fact that you have a job means that you are capable of change, because that's what jobs are. We're improving a process. I'm doing something on behalf of a customer that customer didn't have yesterday. That represents a change.
Yeah.
And on and on and on we go.
Yeah.
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 So we like to wrap up these discussions by recognizing and celebrating a moment of optimism and gratitude. And today, simply, it's like, thank you for change. We're grateful for change. Change can be exhilarating. Change can be exasperating. It can be all of the above. But at the end of the day, change is life.
Yeah. When we say thank you for change, we're saying thank you for life. So in closing, what are your pictures? What are your ideals? Your actions to take, and your influence to use. Thanks so much for joining us.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us today. As always, feel free to explore more about Pictures Out There at picturesoutthere.com and major social media sites. We hope you have the day of your dreams, the day of your pictures.